to finish on time. The reason I'm here today is that he asked me to present you guys on a nutrition, how important the nutrition is in this medical field. Basically, you can have a lot of patients, you can treat them, you can have a best of the best surgery and best of the best equipment in the hospital, yet if you don't provide proper nutrition to your patient, then the outcome would be poor. Lots of study has shows that the patients who are under malnutrition and the patients who are with the good nutrition, they come with the same disease. The one who has a malnutrition, they tend to stay in the hospital much longer. Their outcome is poor, mortality and morbidity is very high. So we like to concentrate on, let's say, a drug therapy or your best surgery that you want to perform on a person, but yet the patient has a poor nutrition status, your surgery or your medical therapy will be wasted, okay? So that's why the reason that you should understand why nutrition is very important. I will go through very brief. This is only 1 hour class, and it's very brief, just introduction to most of the things that you want to know about the nutrition, okay? By definition, what is a nutrition to you guys? It's a fuel. It's your body that you need to maintain yourself, right? And what does it come from? Basically, you have protein, you have carbohydrate, and you have fat. These are the three sources your nutrition come from, okay? Of course, all those nutrition contain your minerals, electrolytes, and vitamins in it, okay? It's part and parcel of the nutrition. So what would be the definition of malnutrition? Basically, malnutrition is come from two reasons. One is you don't eat, you don't take it because you don't have it, or you don't want to take it for any reason. Secondly, not by a choice. You may have a disease, or you may undergo tremendous stressful situation. For example, a disease. For example, I would say after major surgery, or trauma, or you have acute infection, sepsis, burn patient, okay? All of these situations create negative energy. Mean your consumption is so much that whatever you eat is not adequate. You understand? Yes. So then you run into a malnutrition. And it's very common in hospital patient. You will be doing everything except you're neglecting your patient on nutrition. You're writing a drug therapy, and then patient will be on NPO for 5 days, and then you create a malnutrition in those patients, right? It's very common, especially surgical patient, cancer patient, patient who has a septic shock. We will be very aggressive in treating those patients, yet we not be able to pay much attention to nutrition, okay? There are two terminology you should aware of. One is called kashikor. Another one is marasmus, okay? You all know this terminology. Basically, kashikor is a protein malnutrition, and the marasmus is overall malnutrition. Can you give me an example of a kashikor most likely you would see in a hospital?
Wind. Wind babies.
Not really, not really.
Alcohol.
They have plenty of calories, yes, they can be a protein. Protein depleted in the system. The best example I would say in hospital would be we see liver cirrhosis patient, okay? Or renal failure patient. In liver cirrhosis, liver is not synthesizing any protein because it's failed, and you have a negative protein. In renal failure patient, they will be leaking out so much protein from the urine, and they will end up have a protein malnutrition, okay? So basically here, as I said, you have plenty of calories that you're taking, all right? But in your diet, there is not enough protein, okay? Like I said, or your body is not synthesizing protein, even though you're taking a protein from outside. As I said, example would be, I said liver disease and chronic kidney disease, very common, okay? But when you look at in starvation, you will see in a lot of African countries and Asian countries where you will see WHO will be distributing food. And they are doing their best, but their food contain more carbohydrate and less protein. And because everybody has to consume that, you will end up having those patients with the Kesho cord. Like I'll give you show you an example of it. This is a very typical example of patients with the liver cirrhosis. Okay, they don't have enough protein. You don't have protein, body cannot, the circulation cannot hold the fluid in the circulation intravascularly and will leak out, okay? So you end up having ascites, very common one. And those guys are basically malnourished. They're getting adequate calories from the diet, whoever they're distributing them, but there's not enough protein in their own diet. So they end up having pictures like that, okay? Fluid retention in third space, where it can be ascites, it can be a peripheral edema in any form, right? What is marasmus? It's a total calorie depletion, meaning, as I said, you don't have you're not taking enough calories for a reason. Maybe you don't want to purposely, or you may have underlying condition will force you not to take it. Right? As I told you, like in hospital, I mean, in starvation is one very typical example. In hospital patient, I say cancer patient would be one. As I told you again, patient who have gone through a major surgery, have a major trauma, accident, these patients will be end up with one of those situations, okay? So typical picture, I'm not the one to go into all those things in very detail. You can appreciate the extent of problems that you can see. This is a typical starvation where there is no calories, patient is not able to get anything. Remember the first pictures, the kids were getting enough calories, but there's a lack of protein. Here you don't have anything. And this lady is gone through a anorexia nervosa, right? You know they don't want to eat because they want themselves to get thinner. And you know, with that, the cycle will keep goes on, and they probably don't like to eat, and then it will reach to a point they will not be able to eat, because every time they want to eat, they will be nauseating and vomiting, so they cannot eat. So they reach to that stage. There are two reasons that you can have the malnutrition. One would be a medical reason, and one would be a psychological reason. Medical reason, I told you many of them. You have, as I said, recent surgery, under sepsis, chronic illness, any gastrointestinal diseases, anorexia, I told you, dysphagia, cannot swallow things, nausea, vomiting, pancreatitis, a severe one, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's, and ulcerative colitis, and fistula formation from the gastrointestinal tract. You know all those things, right? Those are the very conditions where you will have malnutrition, okay? The other, as I said, psychological, as someone mentioning about alcohol, yes, alcohol is empty calories. It generates about a gram of alcohol, give you about 7 kilocalories. It's a lot of calories. So you will have enough calories, but it has no nutrition values. There is no carbohydrate, no protein, no fat, nothing. Okay, so just a plain. So these patients eventually will develop malnutrition. Poverty, as you know that, I show you that people who are not able to buy things themselves, they are poor, they go into the sometime malnutrition, okay? Isolation, very common problem. You will find patient with the stroke patient or someone who is paralyzed, they are handicapped, they depend on somebody to feed them, and if you cannot feed them, they cannot feed themselves. So they goes into the situation like malnutrition. Disables, as I said again, it's the same thing here. Anorexia, as I told you, that lady went through the situation where she wants to get thinner, and the vicious cycle, and they will not eat, and they will not be able to eat eventually will lead to our malnutrition. And so these are the conditions where you will see this cycle. So what are the consequences of, so we talk about all those things, so what will happen to patients who are malnourished? You can see, I will just concentrate on morbidity and mortality. It is very high. If you have in this hospital, if you take a patient who might have gone through a surgery, and if they are malnourished, they may stay in the hospital very long, their outcome will be poor, they may end up having a lot of infection. So those are the typical problem you will see, okay? So it's a morbidity and mortality is linked to our malnutrition. Again, all others are, we can talk about it. Again, as I said, you can see patient will have muscle atrophies, okay? If you've seen one liver cirrhosis patient or renal patient, you will appreciate that they don't have muscle mass at all. Body is consuming your own protein and eventually in terms of calories, and they will have left but nothing, there will no muscles. I can go on just those things. This is one of the studies I've conducted in clinical nutrition, and they published this study, and it shows that patients who are under no risk, mean they have no nutrition, and they are not malnourished, they are pretty healthy. And the other group which are having malnutrition. And when they follow them in a hospital setting for, say, X period of time, and they found that the complication comes from the non-risk patient much less, only 11.3%, versus the one who has a malnutrition is 30%. So it's about three times higher problems you will face in terms of patient who are malnourished. And complication can be anything. As I said, they may end up having pneumonia, they might have a different kind of infection, okay? They may have a poor wound healing. Anything is considered as a complication, right? So I cannot go through all those studies, but you can have a reference and you can read yourself from, this slide will be yours and I left it here so you can read it yourself, okay? So it's very significant. I don't know if you can appreciate this graph or not. If you go through under certain conditions, say for example, if you have a major burn patient here, their metabolic rate is very high. It basically, remember I told you, if you have a stressful situation, which one would be a burn patient, they consume lots of calorie, and if you cannot replace those calories, you end up having patient with malnutrition, okay? Same thing with a patient with sepsis and trauma, their metabolic rate is very high. They consume a lot more calorie than average you and I would consume. And if you don't feed them properly, then they will end up having malnutrition. Versus other way around, when you look at the starvation, body will try to calm it down and will reduce metabolic energy expenditure so that they can conserve the calories, so they will not go into the malnutrition. Again, this is very important. Protein catabolism, meaning as your body has too much stress, for example, in terms of burn, trauma, sepsis, the body will consume lots and lots of protein, okay? And normally you and I take X amount of protein, which is adequate for normal function, but if you need a lot more and if you cannot provide yourself with that protein, the body will metabolize itself from the muscles to draw the protein, and they will end up having a malnutrition, okay? So how do we got all those information, ask ourselves, how do we assess a patient who is really having a malnutrition, okay? So there are very basic, crude way of assessing patient. Like for example, you look at a patient weight, BMI, their fat storage, and look for the somatic and visceral protein. And I'll show you how to do it very quickly. This is not mean any by any mean that you can do with this small information, but these are the trends how people will do, okay, like for weight. For example, if you take a guy who is 5'9", okay, and he has a body frame small, medium, and large, they should average weight between these ranges, okay? All right? Say, for example, you brought a patient who happened to be same height, 5'9", and his weight is only 50 kg, so I convert it into pound, right? And he happened to be 110 kg, I'm sorry, pound. and the person should be 129. So when you look at it, you find out that this person is 15% less than his counterpart. So that you take the monogram and you compare those things, and you end up saying that 15% less body weight to our average person is supposed to be, right? So what is 15%? So the definition is between 3 to 5% considered malnutrition is mild, between 5 to 9 will be moderate, and anything above 10 will be very severe malnutrition. So this patient considered as malnutrition. Okay? I calculate with the both body frames, just for the example. Okay? BMI, you know that BMI, body mass index. Like, you know that your patient should be in a range between, I would say, around here, normal range, okay? And if you fall below anything, 18.5, you know you're dealing with a malnourished patient, okay? So this is very brief, I mean, crude way of assessing patient. Fat storage, I told you about, it's not very magic. Nutritionists can and do it for you. Basically, you look for the tricep skin fold. So you take a patient, tricep here, and there's an instrument that you can measure the skin thickness. And that thickness should be in a such a way that, remember the one I showed you, the monogram first with the weight? The same one you will have it for the skin fold. And you go and compare yourself and see what percentage variation between these two numbers. And based on that, you will calculate the deficiency. And you will say this mild, moderate, severe, malnourished in terms of fat. Okay. Somatic protein, as I said, somatic would be very easy. Also, you take the upper mid-arm circumference. So you take your arm and you measure the entire arm. And again, with the same thing, you go to the monogram, compare with your patient with the average, and you can determine whether you have a malnourished patient or not. This is a muscle protein. Visceral protein, albumin. You look at the albumin level. Very crude way of looking at it. The albumin level for you and I normally between 3.5 to let's say 5. So your patient fall below that, you know that this patient is malnourished somehow, okay? Again, vitamins are important. Certain vitamins deficiency will tell you some symptoms, you know that, right? So look at those symptoms will also enhance your evaluation of saying that, yes, this patient really malnourished. So you look for certain vitamin deficiency. For example, if you have a vitamin K deficiency, you will see all petechiae and bleeding, it's all those type of things, okay? Same thing with the vitamin C and things like that. So you go on and evaluate those. How do you estimate calories? Now we finish with the evaluation part. Let's ask yourself, what would be the good calories that you're supposed to give to a person or yourself, how much you should be eating, okay? How do we estimate that? This is the everybody will talk about it, basic energy expenditure. It's by definition, the amount of calorie that your body requires at the minimum activity, okay? Like you wake up in the morning, the beginning of your morning, the amount of energy that your body's spending, that is your basic energy expenditure, all right? And then that is very easy to calculate. You can calculate it out, okay? And so this is the formula that you use, okay? To calculate, you don't need to know all this formula, okay? Just, you need to know the patient weight, height, and age. Based on that, you can actually calculate these body's energy expenditure, okay? This is called basic energy expenditure. And then you have stress factors, okay, that you multiply with to get the total energy expenditure. So for example, you and I, or a person in a hospital who is bedridden, probably will say, okay, my patient is bedridden. He probably needs 1.15 of that basic energy expenditure. So say you calculate basic energy expenditure is 1,500 calories, right? So you multiply factor by 1.15, right? So that's the amount of calorie that you probably need for this particular patient. Versus somebody is in severe, tremendous stressful situation where you are burn patient, your calorie requirement, basic one was 1,500 multiplied by 2 would be 3,000. So you can see the variation in a patient body expenditures, okay? So this is a very basic way of calculating calories. I did it for you guys here, one basic energy expenditure. You can look at okay how I calculate it. Calorie sources, what are the calorie main sources for energy?
Glycogen.
Yeah. So you have a carbohydrate and
okay.
There is always a question about protein, whether you want to use protein as a part of the calorie or not. Okay? In average person like you and me, we have a diet which composite of say 50% would be carbohydrate, 30% would be fat, okay? 20% would be
protein.
Okay, that's a very normal thing. All right, you agree with me, all right? But if you have a patient who is in hospital, and imagine the protein calories come from protein is very expensive. Think of yourself, a kilo of meat, okay, and a kilo of rice will give you same calories, but the expense would be one would be say 50, 60 rial per kilograms. Versus rice will be about 5 liters, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing here in the hospital. Mm-hmm. When you take a bottle of amino acid, okay, which is your protein, it causes 200 rial, versus a dextrose will causes only about, say, about 10, 15 rial. So when we calculate calories in the hospital, we don't prefer to use protein as a part of the calorie. We will use protein only to utilize as a building block for muscle. So every time you utilize non-protein calories, come from carbohydrate and intralipid or your fat, that will help this protein to build muscles and other things. You understand me? Okay, that's very important because you can use the calories as protein if you want to amino acid. But the problem is that when protein is metabolized in your body, body will utilize so much protein. The rest of your protein will be going through gluconeogenesis. You know your chemistry, right?
Yeah.
And it converts into fat or into the glucose, and glucose eventually goes into fat. Okay, all right. So no matter what you do, this protein will not stay as protein. Body will utilize X amount. Rest of the thing is history. It's going to be either carbohydrate or glucose or fat. It will store it. So that's not a good idea to use as a calorie substitute, right? You understand the explanation. So we will say we don't like to use in hospital. Okay. Fluid requirement. How much fluid is required daily? Nobody knows. I mean, you can go and drink as much as you want and you pee it out. Okay. There's no problem with that. But in hospital patients, you cannot do that. Okay. You need to have some limitation because the patient might have underlying heart disease, kidney disease, liver disease, and you end up with some sort of a restriction in fluid. Okay. So initially you need to come up with a number which is say universally acceptable for all of us that yes, this person is requiring X amount of fluid. So how do we calculate? Basically it's very easy, okay? You take 70 kilograms man, first 10 kilograms, you use 100 cc per kilogram body weight. So like I said, first 10 kilograms, 100 cc. So like I multiply, I need 1000 ml, right? Second 10 kilograms, I need 50 ml. So I will take 50 and second 10 kg, I use half liter, right? And rest of the weight, you can use 30 cc per kilogram body weight, okay? With that, you will end up getting your total fluid requirement. This is a very easy way of calculating. This formula is universal because even if you have a pediatric patient, you can apply to it. Because that's the way they formulate it, okay? If you don't want to remember that, normally then you say every 1 kilo calorie that you consume, you need 1 to 2 ml of fluid. That's a very crude way of calculating, okay? So you just remember a few of these. Protein, as I said, what is the protein requirement for you? Just without utilizing as a calorie source, your body needs how much?
Building.
One gram per kilo. Per
yeah, approximately one.
Nash.
I would say 1 to 1.2. grams per kilograms body weight, that would be a very acceptable to all of us. But then again, depend on the stress factors. Also, your body need will be increased.
Protein requirement
will be increased. So, this is what you're going to do here. Okay, if you are somebody who in a hospital, just baseline, you don't want to do it. Somebody walk in to you. And he need a protein requirement, right? He need protein. And if you need to calculate, just weigh him up, and multiply by 1.4, and whatever the number comes in, that is the amount of protein that you're going to provide them. But at the same time, if you have a patient who is severely stressed, stressed out in terms of burn or sepsis or whatever it might be, you multiply his weight on them, and probably you have to use 2.2 kilograms and grams per kilogram. So there is a variation because your body requirement is different under different circumstances, right? Now, we finish with the protein and fat. Basically, we talk about that. It's about 30% of your total calories should come from fat, okay? And 50% should be from carbohydrate. Now, route of administration, you talk about nutrition, how many ways you can give nutrition? We know that from here now, first thing. But in patients in hospital, they may not be able to take those things, so you have to give them parenterally. That's the whole magic, and that's the lecture is all about here, okay? So, we have two routes, parenteral routes and enteral. This is what you need to know, very important. First question you will ask yourself, a patient walk in, you say, okay, you want to provide nutrition, so what? Yeah, we will provide them. Which route will be the best way to give them, right? So you say, hey, this patient has an intact intestinal tract. The guts is working, you know, it has a positive abdominal sounds and everything is fine. You choose that route, okay? You just probably trying to use the guts, okay? If you say no, then you go into two scenarios here. You will have probably parenteral nutrition, right? In parenteral nutrition, again, you will provide them the calories through two ways. One is using a central line. The line goes through the subclavian or from jugular vein, either one of them, okay? Or you just use the peripheral vein, okay? You understand me here?
Yes.
The parenteral feeding is two. Okay, either you give them through the central line, you insert the catheter, okay, through the subclavian or jugular, and you feed them through that. Okay, or you just use the peripheral line, your normal peripheral line, okay, and you feed them. And that is a big difference between these two. The one you need the central line is the one where you need a lot of calories. Okay, you will provide with a lot of calories. And secondly, peripheral line will give you limited calories, okay? Because it all depends on the osmolarity of the solution. Now, this is completely different field where you don't want to know much of it. The osmolarity is, what is the blood osmolarity?
280,
right? If you don't remember, just take sodium of the patient, multiply by 2. Okay, that's give you a very crude way of calculating your body osmolarity. Okay, the parenteral solution that we're talking about, the one going through the central line, the osmolarity is in the range of 2,000 plus. Okay, so if you feed them the same thing through the peripheral vein, you will have four bodies right away. In 5 minutes, you will see the swallowing. Okay, so you cannot do that, and you have to use the central line. Okay, I will talk about a little bit of it, not very detailed, because it's not. Not the purpose of this lecture anyway. So let's talk about enteral feeding. Enteral feeding to you, what do you think enteral feeding? How do we usually give it enteral feeding? Imagine, how would be that?
Sure.
Taking orally?
Yes.
Okay, fine. But these people cannot eat.
So what do
you do? Because you have to put different kind of tube, okay? Now tube, when you put the tube, think of yourself. The tube can go from nose to stomach, nose to duodenum, nose to jejunum. Any one of them can go through, right? It depends how you insert it and where you want to locate them, right? And second one, we don't want to use nose. We want to go directly into the stomach. So you do the gastrotomy or jejunotomy or duodenotomy tube, right? For example here. Just for the fast. These are what I'm talking about. I'm going to go back again slide. So I talk about the person who have a tube just goes into the stomach. You can locate anywhere, or you might just directly insert those things into the stomach in different location. Okay, there is a reason for doing all those things. Okay, and in a minute I'll have to. This boat doesn't go back. Okay, so. Yeah. So the Y we want to increase the entropy then. Entropy then is a natural, okay? Like your the food going through your stomach or into intestine, everything which is absorbed, it has to go through the liver, goes through the portal vein, into the liver, and liver will resynthesize, detoxify, okay? Phagocytize, whatever you call it, and then release everything back into the inferior vena cava and circulation. That's a natural way. And that will tell you how much insulin need to be secreted from pancreas, message will go through there, right? This is very natural way of doing it. Number two is very cheap, very cost effective. I mean, if you take, as I said, enteral feeding is like normal food that you're eating, you blend it in a blender, okay? And you can feed it through, okay? As simple as that. Or you can buy a ready-made can like for Ensure and things like that. So this is, you should remember, it's very physiological and very cost effective. Again, there are a lot of studies has conducted, okay? One other thing they will tell you that if you feed through enteral feeding, it will maintain your gut integrity, okay? If you keep your stomach long, a prolonged emptying, okay, without food, there is a chance that in patients, bacteria can translocate from the stomach into the bloodstream and they can cause infection, okay? So that's why they always like to use the gut as a first source of nutrition. Now again, remember the complications come from the other line that you're inserting from the call it central line. You end up can have a ventilator-related sepsis, you have a pneumothorax. During the procedure, you might just puncture the other side, and you might end up having all complications. You can see that, okay? Catheter embolism is very common problems, okay? As I said, these days. Now, this is, you need to know. What is a, so we said all good thing about this enteral feeding. What would be the bad thing? When we cannot use it? Anytime you think that the person has obstructive gastrointestinal tract, okay? Forget it, you cannot use it. Otherwise, you're just going to cause a perforation, all right? So this sometime your patient come with a severe pancreatitis. You don't want to touch this patient. Because remember, when you eat, the pancreas has to release all these enzymes, and pancreatitis, all these enzymes will be coming out, but it will be leaking inside the pancreas, and it will self-digest entire pancreas, okay, and will destroy it. So you end up having a very necrotizing pancreatitis. Patients who have high fistula output mean they have a fistula, fistulas, right, all of them. If a high mean, if it's in an intestinal area, whatever you eat, most of the thing will be absorbed from the intestine. Because there's a fistula, everything usually pour out from there. So it's not a good idea to give anything enteral. You just want to either repair it or you slow it down by not giving a lot of feeding. And as I said, intractable vomiting and diarrhea. So as I said, there is a way of feeding enteral nutrition. There's a two scenarios. You may have a patient who needs nutrition for a long time, okay? Like for example, you may have a patient with esophagus cancer, okay? Part of the esophagus is problem right now. So what you need to do, this patient needs the feeding, but it's going to be very long-term feeding because they cannot take orally, okay? So remember I told you about the tube? In those scenarios, you just put directly tube into the stomach, gastrotomy tube, right? So that's considered as a long-term patient. Or you have a patient who is stroked out, okay? Stroke patient, they will not going to eat by themselves. So if they need to be fed, they probably need long-term feeding. That's they would use the gastrotomy or the direct insertion of those two. There would be a time you might have a short-term nutrition where your patient will be on, say, a respirator, okay? They're not gonna live on respirator forever, most of them. They will be out of it. But at the same time, they cannot eat. But they have intact intestinal tract, right? So you just feed them from the nasogastric or nasoduodenal and all of these places, right? As I show you these things, right? You appreciate this scratch, right? So I'm not, this is not your field, and just for your information, type of feeding available is called polymeric and monomeric. This is just a basic definition. polymeric, normal food that you eat in is just in terms of blending and making it into liquid form, okay? Normally, it is every ml contain 1 kilocalories, just remember that. Sometimes you have a high dense calories, 2 kilocalories for every ml. The reason you will have those things is sometimes you have a fluid restricted patient, so you might use those, okay? Then you have the feeding, which is contain digested food. Instead of carbohydrate, you have glucose or oligosaccharide, or in terms of amino acid for the protein, okay? For the fat, you will use an intralipid, okay, or triglyceride, okay? So those are the things you use. Now ask yourself, so why I want to talk about those things? What is the benefit? How are you going to benefit from this information? Everything you take information, ask yourself, how can I apply this information into my patient? If you cannot apply it, this is a meaningless information to you, okay? Remember I talk about the feeding, the one from gastro, nasogastro, or I say from nasal to duodenum. Think of it, if I want to feed somebody into the duodenum, can I feed them intact food?
No.
Because in stomach, by nature, you break down all those substances to make it into glucose or smallest particle, so it goes into small intestine and will be absorbed, right? But if I have to feed directly into the duodenum, I need something pre-digested food. So these are the foods you're going to feed them. Otherwise, your patient will be running to toilet every 5 minutes because of a diarrhea. It will not absorb. Intact food in a duodenum will not absorb because it's not breaking down. You understand me?
Yeah.
It will be fine. There's a two type of feeding, continuous feeding and intermediate feeding, okay? So you have a patient who you are feeding them, you ask yourself whether we need to have a continuous feeding or intermediate. Now, normally we prefer to have an intermittent feeding, okay? Like you and I will eat 3-4 times a day, right? Same thing, they will have a bag of fluid or food, they will pour it in half an hour, they clamp the tube and that's it, all right? Or you might put the tube and just like IV infusion, you will be infusing or feeding this patient hourly basis. So every hour you might be releasing food, say about 50, 60, 70 cc, okay? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I'm talking about then again, ask yourself, what is so magic about this information? Think of it, sometimes you have a patient who you fed them in a stomach, just like I said, by bulk feeding, which is intermediate feeding. And their food is not moving into the duodenum because of they are in a respirator or they're lying down position. So most of the food will be sitting in the stomach, okay? The gastric emptying time is very poor. So when they have any movement, okay, some of the things can regurgitate and they aspirate, so they will have a lot of aspiration pneumonia. In those patients, we prefer to use continuous feeding. You feed them 100 or say 56 cc, and by time it will be mobilized into small intestine, right? So you don't have residual in a stomach. You understand me?
Yeah.
Those are the purpose that they have these two methodology of feeding. You don't need to go into more detail. Total parenteral nutrition. This is the important one that I want to talk about. It's, as I said, is given through the peripheral vein or central one, okay? Contain the same amount of nutrition we talk about. In terms of carbohydrate, we have what? Glucose. In terms of protein, we have what? Amino acid. In terms of fat, we will have what?
Yes.
Intralipid, okay? So those are the things contained. Patient selection, I said, always ask yourself this question, okay? If you think your patient will not going to eat for more than 5 days, you cannot stop. By definition, hospital requirement, you have to feed them, right? And you say, somebody said, okay, my patient will have a surgery, give him NPO. And next day, the theater is not available. Next day, something. So it goes on, this kind of scenario, okay? So you have to make sure that your patient will not eat for more than 5 days. You have to feed them through the parenteral, okay? So 5 to 7 days, if you fit into that situation, you start feeding them parenteral, okay? Or if you don't want to, ask yourself, patient cannot eat, will not eat, or should not eat. If fit into any one of them, they are entitled for parenteral nutrition, right? Cannot eat, GI obstruction, okay? Will not eat, they are nauseated, vomiting, they don't want to eat. I don't care. Whatever you feed me, the plate will come and goes as it is, okay? or should not eat, like pancreatitis people, they should not eat because you will harm them. So ask yourself this question. Some of the reasons, some of the very, very definitive patients that you want to put them on a TPN would be, is that that boring that is sleeping? I hope not. Massive bowel resection, okay? Somebody has a massive bowel resection, mean like, say, for example, short bowel syndrome, you know that, right? Most part of the duodenum and your jejunum or ileum will be chopped up, okay? So what happened? There is nothing, no place to absorb anything. So can you feed them? No. So you probably end up feeding them by enterotoxin, okay? Sometime you will have a patient with a radiation, entire body radiation, it damage all your lining of the gastrointestinal tract. You feed them, nothing will absorb. So you probably temporarily go to feed them by enterotoxin, okay? As I said, pancreatitis, chemo agent, they're always nauseated, so you don't want to feed them. AIDS patient come with a severe malnourish, they will not be able to eat, so they are just, you need to build them up slowly, okay? As I said, severe catabolic stages where you have to talk about the burn patient, major trauma, car accident, how we are this, every third person in our surgical unit is RTA patient, so you have to take care of them. As I can see, after major surgery and small bowel resection, fistula, as I give you a list of things, burn patient, sure. Yeah, chemotherapy again, organ failures occasionally. Calories, we talk about same thing, nothing magic about it, calculation would be about the same thing, okay? Just want to make sure that fat emulsion is part of the major calories coming from the TPN, okay, from the nutrition. So the fat is like every 1 cc, okay, of fat, it contains 2 kilocalories, okay? Or 1 gram of fat will give you about 9 kilocalories. It's a very condensed calorie. And occasionally, or most of the time, you end up using this as a part of the calories, right? It's a very good reason. But keep in mind that one thing, that as much as we like to have these things, at the same time, you may not be able to use this fat as a calorie in many situations. Like for example, if you are having a dyslipidemia, MR, or history of acute coronary syndrome, or ischemic heart disease, you want to avoid this patient. Pancreatitis patient I told you about, the previous having a fat embolism, severe liver disease, and part of the fat is egg yolk, you know, the way they make it. So if somebody's allergic to it, you want to learn. These are normal things, you have it in your TPN, okay? Sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, phosphorus, chloride. These are normal electrolytes you should have in your parenteral nutrition, okay? This part of it. And now, I don't want to memorize any of these things. I just want to show the ranges here. The reason I use the range is because if you have a healthy person, I mean, if I ask him how much sodium you ingested yesterday, I don't know. I eat a gallon of it. No. So you will remove it from your body because you have a good kidney. Same thing here. You take a range where more or less patient will fit into that. If you give excess, you will probably really be able to eliminate. If you give less, eventually when you monitor them, you will realize that you're not giving enough. Okay? So that's the way you look after. And I'll talk about the giving a peripheral and central line here. Advantage, this is the two lines for you to remember. Peripheral versus the central line, advantage and disadvantage. Central line can give you large amount of calories, okay? And even if you have a small volume, say for a patient is restrict volume, you still can give you that kind of calories because condensed calories, okay? You understand that. Now this, a peripheral nutrition you cannot give because it has a limitation on the osmolarity or the amount of calorie that you can put in, so you cannot. So if you have a very severely ill patient who needs lots of calorie, you never can go with the peripheral line. You have to be with the central line, okay? You understand that? Very important for that. One is, of course, you know that one requires surgical intervention, one is just a peripheral, it's very easy, okay? How do you monitor those patients? Basically, you monitor this patient urea electrolyte. In our hospital, we have a panels of investigation. Urea electrolyte means you manage sodium, potassium chloride, creatinine, and phosphate, and all those things. Okay? And then you have a liver function test. So every day, most likely, you'll be doing a blood chemistry at the beginning. And later on, maybe twice a week. Okay, it depends on what type of patient. Same thing with the LFTs and others. Just the investigation you want to do to monitor this patient. Okay, it's important because you will be giving intralipid, and patient might be end up having a dyslipidemia. So you want to monitor the triglyceride and cholesterol level. Okay, sometimes you might be feeding patient for a long time, and at the same time, the TPN doesn't contain vitamin K, okay? So you may be depleted with K, and you monitor those things, right? It's a very common sense, okay? Important thing, you need to have an in and out, okay? In and out means urine, the fluid that you intake and the fluid goes from the body. You always want to have a balance between those things, okay? Otherwise, you might be feeding them by peripherally or centrally, and you might end up having fluid overload. Okay, so you just monitor this much. Complication, very, very, very basic things. There are three kind of complications: mechanical, septic, and metabolic complication. Mechanical, as I told you, during the procedure, you might damage so you want to avoid those. Those are common problems. Okay? Thrombosis is the other one. The infection, there's a central line, and if you don't take care of it, basically, you need to have aseptic technique, and every day you have to look after them. And if you don't do that, you will end up having an infection. By the way, once you have a central line infection, mortality rate is high. And it's like endocarditis. Once the bacteria sit on the tube, no matter how much antibiotic you give, this bacteria is still there, okay? So you need just to yank out the whole tube, and then you have to put the new one. So it's a problematic. And metabolic, you have two complications, early one and late complication. Early complication, you might be giving too much fluid, too much electrolyte, okay? You might have imbalance between a lot of these electrolyte things. And then you really worried about this guy, refeeding syndrome. You never, ever, ever, ever feed anybody who is really, really malnourished and full calories, okay? They would die. Basically, it's called refeeding syndrome because your body doesn't have enough electrolyte to handle all those things, okay? So you don't have enough phosphorus, you don't have enough potassium, and you give a lot of calories, those things will be utilized and end up having electrolyte imbalance, cardiac arrhythmia, and they die, okay? So you always start very gradually. So you calculated calories 50% in first 2-3 days, 70% second 2-3 days, and then you move on 1 week full-blown calories. The late complication, you might be feeding the patient and you might not putting enough electrolyte, no enough minerals, enough vitamins, and you might end up having all the deficiencies, okay? So you just have to keep eye on those things. And thank you very much, I'm done, guys. I hope it's beneficial for you. In 1 hour, how much I can do? Normally I take a long time to teach these things, okay? And I did my best. I hope you understand some of these things. I need the attendance sheet. I don't know how many of you are supposed to be. I really don't care, just I need the paper back. Yes,
regarding the reference, from where we should read?
You can have my thing and my references and take the parental books. They are, okay, I'll send you the reference. Okay.
Thank you very much.
But each hospital has a booklet for the nutrition.